Friends, have you heard about the majestic ponytail? Upon the head of one Orrick Hogan it is braided. Said to hold immense power without fail, yes, that is Orrick Hogan's ponytail. And fine were the days when it graced these shores, that magical, twisted lock of hair. Carrying blessings from Orrick Hogan's heart to yours, yes, fine were the days Ora walked these shores. A song called Katie Cruel is what we discussed. Orrick Hogan and her band had a blast, I think. But just like Katie Cruel, who could go either way, it's time to find out if this show will swim or sink. What do you think, you dinky winky pinky? Who got a gabina?
What is a song?
Where do songs come from? What is the life of a song?
How much can a song morph and change before it becomes something else entirely?
What is the essence of one song?
Please welcome our special guest, Orrick Hogan.
Orrick Hogan.
Orrick Hogan, all the way from the west coast of Canada, here in Galway. We're here to talk about a song called Katie Cruel. But before we get into the song, we can just take a quick trip down memory lane and talk about when you and I met and how we met and how we came to be sat here together.
Absolutely.
Great.
Do you remember?
I have a distinct memory of when you first crossed my path, but I don't think you would remember. This dates back to, I think it was probably 2005 in Portland, Oregon.
Wow.
I would have been 18 years old, sneaking into bars with my fake ID. Because as you all probably know, in America, you have to be 21 years old to go into a bar. I may or may not have had a fake ID. That's for the record. But I was in a bar called Valentine's.
Aww.
Do you remember where this is?
Yeah.
A tiny little bar in Portland, Oregon. Lovely spot for a drink or for a coffee that would host really quite obscure music, actually. Anything from really experimental stuff to, folky stuff. And I was there at the time. I lived in this ratty old duplex in Portland, Oregon. And on the other side of the duplex, there lived this guy. And you're going to have to remind me of his name. I remember his project name was Bird Costumes.
Yeah, Daniel Osborne.
Daniel Osborne.
Daniel, and he had a bird mask. So when he like hunched over his guitar, it looked like, or bear, a bear, sorry. So it looked like there was a bear playing the guitar.
Right. And so he would have been more a friend of my older sister, Heather. But because I was 18, I was super awkward and shy at that age. But I remember being at Valentine's. And Daniel was, I think you were, did you play at Valentine's?
Yes.
Okay, so I think that's what
Definitely.
Was happening. I, for some reason, had to leave before you played. I think maybe I didn't have my ID yet, and I actually had got kicked out before you started. But Daniel was talking about you, and the way that he spoke about you was like talking about some sort of majestic magician or something. And so he was building you up, and then all of a sudden I see you walk in the room, and I was like, oh my God, there she is.
Aww. And did I have a cape on or something?
No, but I remember you had quite a majestic sort of braided ponytail going on.
No,
I remember
way.
That.
For those of you who are listening, I might have my hair braided in some kind of majestic
got
ponytail
one now, that's right.
at this very moment.
Yes. So that was when I first came to know who you were.
And then it was years before, you know, I don't remember exactly when we actually crossed paths and really properly met each other. It was probably when you and my sister were playing a gig together 6 or 7 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, maybe in Seattle.
That was probably it. And I think you came and stayed with Heather for a day or two in Portland. Does that sound right?
Yeah, definitely.
So that was when I came to know about you and your music more. And then when I first moved over to Galway in 2016 and I was just getting to know people here, one day I just happened to hear that you were playing at the Roisin Dubh.
Yeah.
So I just came to the show and I came and, like, you know, awkwardly said, "Hey, remember me?" And I have to thank you, because that night that you had a guy playing with you who happens to be here tonight, Mr. Max Jones. And Max and I have since become the best of friends.
Yeah.
It's true. So, you know, that, and also Kyle was there playing that night. We've got Kyle Womily here as well. You introduced me to a couple of great folks that I've continued to have relationships with here in Ireland. And here you're back again. I think it's your first time back since then, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah. So
it's been a while.
You did a gig the other night at the Tyveark Theatre with Ye Vagabonds. I got myself a new t-shirt.
Yes.
Ye Vagabonds
t-shirt. It looks
great. And we're going to talk about Katie Cruel. Tell us when, well, maybe before we get into the song, just give us a little background as to maybe whatever you like, how you got started with music or...
Sure.
Well,
my mother was and is a musician, and my dad was a photographer, and we had a recording studio in the house.
Wow.
And there were a lot of hobos around, and everybody was playing, everybody was jamming.
Nice.
So it was kind of a no-brainer. It was never like, I think I'm going to be a musician. It was just like, this is what's happening.
Right.
And I wasn't very good in school.
Classic,
so I'd skip a lot and hang out in the park with all of the, like, Oogle Punks and hippies learning how to play Nirvana songs.
Nice.
So I had a very prestigious, you know, upbringing with conservatory training and whatnot. No, it just felt like the out of all the things that were available as options, that maybe the most exciting thing I could think of doing and the most familiar.
Mm.
And... yeah, it was scary, though. It was a weird entry. I mean, that was back in, the 90s. It was like the late 90s and early 2000s. And I don't know, being a woman in music was still like this weird. It was just such a funny time. There, you know, like, it just felt like I had an awkward time, even though it felt like this really natural thing, kind of feeling my way through all the wonkiness that is the music world, I guess.
Yeah.
And being like, well, how, what is this? And what is playing music? And so
right.
it was a very awkward kind of journey, I think, as a teen and young person, kind of figuring out what I wanted to do, what I could offer. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned, like, the sort of awkwardness of being a woman in the music industry, like, at that time. But do you feel like we're anywhere better now? Like,
no.
I think you're not alone.
Yeah. I think there is, like, a bit of a bump for a minute, but I'm pretty cynical. I think that, like, the Me Too thing happened, and all of a sudden there is this, like, this real interest in, like, oh... representation of,
right.
of different people, and then it just kind of died out. But
wow.
No, that's really cynical. I'm being a bit hard, but no, it's real. Like, we've all got work to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this song is sort of perhaps thematically a little bit tied in, like. How did you first come across the song?
Tied in with, like, yeah, how It's funny. We were just talking in the car about this. I first came across the song. The Be Good Tanyas kind of took me under their wing.
The who now?
The Be Good Tanyas.
The Be Good Tanyas,
they had this
yes.
big hit back in the day called The Littlest Birds. It was like they were like a folk trio. And Trish Klein, who played banjo and guitar in, mm-hmm. in the group, she introduced me to Karen Dalton in the song.
Yes,
and she asked me to play it with her. And at the time, I was learning how to play fiddle. So, and I came across this song, and it was a deep cut.
Yeah,
it is a deep cut for a lot of people, but for me personally, it just felt like it was speaking right to my soul. And since then, like, it's the one song that's just stayed with me this whole time.
Wow.
That I keep on playing it. It's got a bit of a Red Shoes vibe. I'm sort of scared of it, but I love it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And this is, I actually was going to save this question for later, but I want to ask it now. But because the theme of the song, well, actually, maybe we should listen to the song first and then we could talk about what it's about.
It.
You just mentioned Karen Dalton. I happen to have a cassette tape of Karen Dalton's album In My Own Time. And Katy Crew was always my favorite song on that album. So let's put in the tape and hear the track. Let's see here. Side A. This is not Spotify, but I somehow just gave them a plug anyway, didn't I?
Oh, no.
So simple, and a lot of that album is quite heavily produced with like full band, and mm-hmm. to me, maybe this is a bit of projection, but it kind of sounds like a bunch of dudes taking over in the studio, like, hey, let's add some funk to this. But that song is just Karen and the banjo and that slam and fiddle in there.
Wow.
Yeah, it's great. So when did you first hear that? Do you have some idea?
Yeah,
oh, you just
it was in Vancouver with Trish. And, I'd never heard anything like it before.
Yeah. And how long between then and when you decided to try and play the song yourself.
That was getting ready for a gig. So she wanted me to play that at a place called the Railway Club in Vancouver. And there's a little toy train that went around the railroad. So it was actually, you know, it came by its name rightfully. And it was this sweet little place. And we probably played that the next day.
Right.
Yeah.
So what year... Do you have any idea?
Oh, God. I honestly couldn't place it that easy, but I'd say like, yeah, maybe 2004, 2005.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Because there is, you do have one recording released of the song on this record here, Ribbon Vine from 2012, which features our friend Max Jones on the bowed guitar. So that's... That's a good few years before it finally got recorded.
Yeah. Yeah. So I met Max in Portugal, and we were doing a tour, and he was part of my opening act. And we became friends and started playing together and met some really great musicians in Spain on that tour. And we played this festival. And this fellow who did the sound really loved the set, and he offered to record this album in Spain.
Right.
So he produced it and engineered it, and we did that album with some really dear friends. We just sat in a little cabin in an orange orchard for a few days and rehearsed all the songs together and played the whole album live.
Wow.
And it was a special time.
So what started off as a tour ended up in a recording session, ended up in a record.
Yep.
Wow. Basically, that's cool. Yeah. That's really cool. Okay. So what's this, what would you say the song is about? I mean, the first line kind of says a lot, right? It says, when I first came to town, they called me the Roving Jewel. Now they've changed their tune. They call me Katie Cruel. Mm. And we were kind of chatting a little bit before, and you said there was one thing you weren't sure about the meaning. And I said, don't say anymore. Let's talk about it once okay. We get into this. So what does this song mean to you?
This song, to me, I'd say it's had, because I've got this, it's a living thing. So what it means to me has changed over the years and is constantly evolving. It's become this kind of meditation. As like, I think a lot of work that you can do can be, you know, especially if like at this point, I mean, I was 25, almost 40. So
yeah.
I've been living with this song for a really long time. And,
yeah.
You know, but, you know, it's, I want to talk about the history of it a little bit because I think that has a lot of significance in understanding what it means to me.
Yeah.
So as far as we know, you know, it's there are a lot of different iterations that come from Scottish and Irish descent. And they're similar songs. So there's a song called I Know Where I Am Going, a song called The Light Bob's Lassie, The Lee Boy's Lassie, Rob's Lassie, Lingbu's Lammie, The Plowboy's Lassie. Those being about obviously a sex worker. And
okay.
So that,
right.
That having this connotation of like when I first came to town, you know, everybody loved me.
I was fresh and exciting to everybody.
And now they call me, you know, the Ling Boo's Lammie.
right.
And, you know, that ties into the meaning for me. And then, you know, because obviously it's the meaning of the song, where it came from. And then, you know, there are, you know, bits and bobs everywhere. People have said that it was used as a marching song during the American War of Independence. And
marching song.
Yeah. Which seems strange.
It does.
But also
seem strange.
not unusual. Like there are similar songs that were used in the same way.
Right.
So that's something. And then I was talking to my tour mate, and I asked my friend Patrick what it meant to him, and he was saying that to him, it was kind of the way that women are treated in patriarchy, that you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. That you're, right. You're a saint or a slut. You're never going to really be like be at ease in the patriarchy, or be, you know, just good. You're always going to be kind of put on a pedestal or right. you know, that kind of symbology. But it also for sex workers, for, you know, for maybe a lot of people, for so many different reasons that don't fit the mold of patriarchy, of colonialism, of a mold,
right.
you know, of some kind of forced role or system. Something where you know, or some kind of conditional love or acceptance or
right.
something. And it's always like that idea that somehow you need to adhere to a certain like role of being function. As a human being always yeah. kind of sat funny with me in a personal way, but also in general, you know. So that's, I think, if that makes sense, you know, like that there's this yeah. there are all of these different ties and in the meditation and in the time that I spent reflecting or sitting like embodying this song, just, you know, going through grief about that for other people, for myself, for the state of the world, for how we need to navigate, you know, love and acceptance and being as human beings in patriarchy, in colonization, in all of these really dysfunctional systems.
Right.
And how awful that can be. And then it can also like take these forms where, depending on how you play it, it's like, you know, it can be like defiant, you know?
Sure.
Oh yeah. Call sure. me Katie Krull.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Right, man. Right, right. Sort of taking the power back through song somehow, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I'm really interested in this thing you said about the song becoming like a sort of meditation over time, because as in like it just you stay with it and just like in a normal meditation, like if you try to put a label on things, you're missing the point. You have to just kind of sit with yourself or sit with whatever it is and let it speak to you in a way. And but what I'm curious about is that easier to do with a song you didn't write? Do you know what I mean? Because I feel like a lot of people might write a song early on and it might mean something to them then. And then over years, especially if the song is successful and your audience continues to want to hear it. I know there's countless stories of musicians who just get tired of playing a song, but they end up playing it because they know that's what the people want to hear. But I wonder, is it easier to have this role of, not necessarily detachment, but in a way it's detachment. You're sort of letting go of your strings to it and letting it speak to you and change over time. Do you think that could be easier with a song that's not yours, or am I just, I don't know.
That's such a good question. I mean, I haven't really thought about it.
Do you have songs that you've written that feel somewhat the same, that might have, you know, that you stay with over time and the meaning changes to you over time? And
I think so, but maybe not in the same way, you know, and maybe there's something to be said for these songs that survive for so long.
Right.
I mean, who knows who wrote Katie Krull or, you know, Ling Boo's Lammy,
yeah.
Light Bob's Lassie, the Plowboy's Lassie. It's, you know, where the song came from and why it's traveled and had so many lives. Like, you know, I'm just one artist that's in love with the song. There are so many in our generation of
right.
musicians and songwriters. There are countless versions of the song that have been recorded.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a testament to something that just, you know, that it stays like not just, you know,
stays relevant. Sorry,
forgive
somehow.
Me, not just in folk circles, but like, I mean, I'm talking it like, I know some crazy avant-garde, you know, Lingua Ignota did a version of Katie Krull. There are all sorts of different styles of musicians that have done
right.
versions of this song. So
wow.
It's a deep cut, you know, and I don't think that I've written any songs that are like that yet. Anyway,
I suppose it'd almost be presumptuous as a songwriter to like be like, oh yeah, I have this one song that's going to be a classic for hundreds of
legendary.
Years to come.
This is for sure going to last for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, this one's a deep cut. No, but it's funny what you say. I went on looking for the history of the song, and here's Wikipedia. The first thing it says is, Katie Cruel is a traditional American folk song, likely of Scottish origin.
Ooh.
That doesn't tell you much, does it? But like most traditional songs, there's some verses that appear in some versions and don't appear in other versions, and the song has just been passed around and changed a lot as it changed hands. That Karen Dalton version is actually really short. It leaves out quite a few. Does your version have more verses than the Karen Dalton version, or did you?
I just repeat one.
Okay, because there are some other verses. We should
play some more versions. We've got so many versions to get through.
Yeah, we should choose a couple maybe to listen to.
Okay.
You sent me a few ideas of things to listen to earlier today. And a couple of them are those songs that are under different titles, but they're known to be sort of related to this song, or an offshoot of this song, or this song is an offshoot of them, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
We might not really know. And then I only brought one other version myself by a contemporary Irish group called Lancum. Do you know of Lancum? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
I got the chance to see them live down in Cork a couple of years ago and picked up this CD and immediately noticed that they were doing a version of Katie Cruel. And their version is like, have you ever seen the film Dead Man?
Yeah.
Do you know the film Dead
Jim
Man?
Jarmusch?
Jim Jarmusch?
Absolutely.
Do you know how Neil Young did the soundtrack for that film, right?
I've got another story that Gary Farmer... He was the lead. He was nobody.
Yes. Oh, nobody.
He was in a play with my mom in Vancouver.
No way.
Yeah.
Great. Wow. So glad that came up. Okay.
Yeah.
So the film, for some reason, when I hear Lancum's version of Katie Cruel, I think of Dead Man, because towards the end of Dead Man, it starts to feel like they're just dragging his dying body along, and the it kind of gets into slow motion, and the music gets really hypnotic and trancy, and it's painful, but you love it. You know what I mean? It's like you're glued to it, but you kind of want out somehow, because it's so. maybe that's a strange thing to say about a song that you do like, or a version that you do like, but the Lancum version of the song. I was saying to a friend earlier, it feels like a dying body being dragged through the sand or something. It just kind of like, ugh. And I was looking just yesterday at the liner notes in this CD, and it says that they originally arranged this song for a film.
Oh, cool.
So then it kind of made sense to me a little bit more. So that could be one version that we listen to.
Sure.
But you also sent over a few different versions yourself. So let me just see which ones you sent over. You sent over Gene Redpath. You were saying Light Bob's Lassie?
Yes.
It almost looks like a German word to me. Licht Bob's Lassie.
Does anybody know what?
It's L-I-C-H-T, which is a German word.
So my tour mate told us that it's a infantry, like light infantry. So you've got a backpack
okay,
and your rifle, I guess.
Only because I lived in Germany for a while, I immediately went to say Licht. Okay, so there's that version. There's Odetta, does I Know Where I'm Going.
Oof.
And then another version you sent over is by White Magic.
So White Magic would be the that's Katie Cruel. The
right.
other two, they're songs that I think predated Katie Cruel.
Okay, so Katie Cruel came after, you think?
I believe so,
okay.
Yes. So the Scottish song Light Bob's Lassie?
Yes. Might have been the original.
I believe so. And then
interesting.
The Katie Cruel...
Okay.
I believe is maybe an American iteration or okay. something like that. But I don't know. I've been trying to figure it out for a long time.
Right. Well, what do you want to listen to?
I think let's do the Lightbulb Sassy, because we'll hear a couple Fantastic. Of the modern versions of Katie Kroll, but...
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Okay. Gene Redpath. Do you know... Can you tell me anything about Gene Redpath? Because it's new to me.
No.
All I know is that this album appears to have been released in 1982.
It's my favorite version that I've found so far of Lightbulb Sassy.
Right. Here we go.
First when I come to the tune, they called me young and bonny. Knew they've changed my name. Call me the Lightbulb's honey. First when I come to the tune, they called me young and sonsy. Knew they've changed my name. Call me the Lightbulb's lassie. I'll dye my petticoats red and face them with a yellow. I'll tell the dyster lad that the Lightbulb I'm to follow. Feather beds are soft and bended rooms are bonny. I would leave them all and jog along with Johnny. Oh, my heart's been sair. Sheen Craigie's corn, I winna see him the nicht, but I'll see him the morn. First when I come to the tune, they called me young and sonsy. Knew they've changed my name. Call me the Lightbulb's lassie.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and then there's this version, and then there's I Know Where I'm Going, which has a similar lyrics.
Okay.
But it's about a woman who has quite a lot of money, but she's in love with a fellow who's kind of he's busy, you know.
Okay.
And
busy
and
how?
So he's just busy, like okay. he's getting around, and she's like so she's got everything that she could ask for, except for him, and uh-huh. so it's got a different meaning.
Okay.
But there's still this kind of
let's check that out, because the Odetta.
Odetta. Yeah.
I just wanted to point out that you kind of. Because in the American version, this was something that was interesting when I was reading. This is like a little book that comes along with the Lancome CD. No, it doesn't come along. It's like a separate thing that was at their merch table. But Rady Pete, who sings the Lancome version, she mentions here that, so there's this thing about a red petticoat or red shoes, and apparently that was a sort of a way of talking about sex workers.
Okay.
Before,
yep.
If they had a red petticoat, you sort of knew what the line was about. It was sort of an underhanded way of saying what the person was or describing their actions. But like in the Karen Dalton version, that's not mentioned in a lot of the American versions. And I thought that Rady Pete pointed out something really interesting, which is that a lot of these songs, when they traveled to America, those sort of explicit references disappeared and the songs became a bit more vague.
But I mean, they became vague in maybe some ways, but Karen Dalton, I mean, like maybe it's kind of a funny thing where it's like it loses some of its traditional or original meaning, but it gains other meaning.
Yes.
So like the, you know, with Karen Dalton, like she had a really hard life. And when her music career didn't take off, she you know, she struggled a lot with addiction. She lost touch with her kids.
Yes.
And ended up dying very young of AIDS. Mm. So, you know, she had this whole, you know, a really tough life.
Yeah.
And it seems like it was a meaningful
absolutely song, yeah know, and maybe it, vague was the wrong word.
But it's more that it, yeah.
Yeah, I don't necessarily mean that like when it changed that it lost an essence. I just thought that was an interesting point that
there's this whole reference to sex work, to workers, and that wasn't carried
and then it
kind
of just disappears in a yeah. lot of the American versions, apparently.
Yeah.
It's just interesting. I don't know why or if that was even a conscious decision. It could have been, I don't know. Maybe they
had a different meaning for Americans, I'm guessing, yeah. too. I don't right. know if that was the term that they would use, because redcoats were
something else.
Something
yeah,
else. They were loyalists to right. the British crown.
Right.
Right. So I don't know if like I'm not a historian,
or like,
and I don't know.
With communism
I'm just
or
like
something.
Guessing and wondering if that's a possibility
yeah.
that the connotation would have been lost. Maybe at that time, if we're talking about the American Revolutionary right. War. But as a high school dropout, I don't know if I'm
yeah.
qualified to talk to you
no.
about
and I don't pretend to like be a scholar either. I really am just curious about all the, you know, different iterations the song has had. But
that's just what I was thinking when, you know, about the red coat. I was like, ooh, that means something different. That's like, that means Canadian. I don't think they would, you know, like it during the Revolutionary War. Anyways.
But also red was associated with communism as well. And you know, in America, that was like the no kind of word, and you know, for a long time any sort of association with that would be in a lot of people's eyes seen very poorly, so it,
right.
who knows what happened to that line or where it got dropped, but
yeah, let's check out the song with that line in it though. That's
does Odetta reference the red coats? We'll see, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
I know where I'm going, and I know who's going with me. I know who I love, but the dear knows who I'll marry. I have stockings of silk and shoes of fine green leather, combs to buckle my hair, and a ring for every finger. Feather beds are soft, painted rooms are bony, but I would leave them all for my handsome, winsome Johnny. Some say he's bad, but I say he's bonny. Finest of them all is my handsome, winsome Johnny. Yes, I know where I'm going, and I know he's going. I know who I love, for the dear knows who I'll marry.
Different.
Yeah.
But similar lines.
Yeah. What?
And similar. It's closer to light bulb.
Right.
The light bulb's Lassie, and then in meaning it's different, but there's some threads there.
Right. Yeah. It's almost like a more empowered part of the story or something, like a traveling person who I don't know, it seems more empowered, like, yeah, I know where I'm going is the line.
Yeah, and it's interesting because in Katie Krull, like the banger, the really great line in Katie Krull is, if I was where I would be, then I am where I am, then I would be, sorry, if I was where I would be, then I am, then I, oh my God.
No, it's a tongue twister, that one. It's a tongue twister.
I can sing it all the time. If I was where I would be, then I'd be where I am not. Here I am where I must be, where that I would, I cannot. So it's talking about, you know, not being where you want to be.
Right.
And then, yeah, in that song, in the one that Odetta was doing, So I Know Where I'm Going, it's about this woman. She's got a ring on every finger. She's got, you know, painted rooms and feather beds, but Johnny, her, you know, her handsome, winsome lover is, yeah, he's busy.
He's busy. Doing God knows what. So, Johnny, where are you?
No.
Just a couple more tidbits that I discovered while researching a bit. Apparently, there's a song by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds called When I First Came to Town. I don't have a version of it here, but I just thought it was interesting that, Wikipedia says anyway, so it must be true, that When I First Came to Town was inspired by Karen Dalton's Katie Krull, but written from the perspective of a male narrator. Mm. So, I don't know. Go check that out if you're curious. But yeah, let's listen to one or two more versions, and then we're gonna ultimately do a version of this song here with your amazing band. And
Peter, can I interject?
Yes, please.
The song you just played, then.
Yeah.
That's really similar to an Irish song. It has the same lyrics as "I Know Who Was Sick." I've been singing.
You have been singing that song.
It's got the same lines. My lad Johnny, and what is it for? It's like the same bells on every finger, and yeah, it's the same song essentially.
Who was it that did the that?
I know from Peg Clancy Power.
Peg Clancy Power, that's right. I Know Who's Sick. Wow.
It's funny. Huh. So literally the same lyrics.
Well, there was a part of it there where I started to think about another song that we did a show about a couple weeks ago called Lord Gregory. And so, I don't know, after a while, it's like, wait, what song are we talking about? And where are we? But okay, let's get right back to Katie Krull.
Okay. Yes, sir.
I think let's get back to Katie Krull. What song are we talking about anyway? No, Katie Krull. Let's listen to White Magic, because it's the last one you sent over, and I've yet to hear it.
Okay, so I'm just going to say a little thing about White Magic. She's the best. She was in a band called Quixotic, and they did a deep cut called The Breeze. If you ever get a chance to check that song out, it's amazing. And she lives in LA, and she's an experimental artist. She's been playing forever. Not a lot of people really know about her, but I love her so much. And she's one of the most influential singer-songwriters I can think of.
Awesome.
So that was also how I kind of really fell in love with Katie Krull was.
Oh, great.
Listening to her too.
Yes. Can I offer anyone a little tasty orange while we listen to one more version here?
Call me Katie Krull. was where I would be, then I'd be where I am now. Here where I must be, where I would be, I
great version.
Yeah, right?
White magic.
White magic.
Not black magic. White magic.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to save the Lancome version for another time because it's almost 10 minutes long and it really is like being dragged through the sand while you're dying. But it's great.
In like the most beautiful way.
Yeah.
You know, like... that's okay. That's just the last thing I want to say about it is like, there's something really cool about, well, about music and the way in that you've got this like painful story and then you can make it into something that, you know, you transform the pain, you know,
yeah.
Like you take something that's just like, there's this, you know, this person, they're being ostracized and, you know, for whatever reason, you know, And it's this horrible, you know, lament, but then you make it into something that's...
Yeah. That
magical.
That very much almost answers the question that I would just wanted to ask you, which is because, as you pointed out, Karen Dalton, who probably has the most well-known version of this song, kind of... passed away, had a very tragic fate, really.
Yeah.
Much like the character in the song, perhaps. Yeah. And sometimes I guess I think about, like that's really interesting to me. I think about like someone like, do you know the actor Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Yeah.
He passed away very tragically some years ago.
Yeah.
But if you watch the films that he's in, he was always playing the tragic character.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes when I learn a song, I can get a bit superstitious sometimes that I'm going to manifest something horrible if I'm singing about something horrible, you know. And this is my own personal thing, perhaps, but I also somewhere in me believe that music is so powerful that it could do that, I suppose.
That you could, that's why I said it was a bit red shoes. You know what I'm talking about when I say that?
No, I'm not sure if I do.
It's a film. I won't go into it because it's a long story, but it's an old and very powerful film about
red
a ballerina.
Shoes. Okay.
And it gets into the Hans Christian Andersen story about the red shoes.
Okay.
And it's just check it out. We'll talk about it again. It's really interesting.
All right.
I'd highly recommend it, but it's a very tragic sort of, you know,
yeah,
kind of self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes.
And yes, sorry.
No. I mean, like, that's maybe the description I was looking for, a self-fulfilling prophecy. But I like what you said, that music can also be a way to take something horribly tragic,
yeah,
and transform it into something beautiful for the world.
And that's what we need, you know, that's what we need to do. So, like, there are so many ways that we're talking about this in a spectral way. But if you think about it in the way, you know, that I presented before, where it's, you know, it's about, you know, ostracizing sex workers or you know, like Patrick said, women, you know, that you can never really win, or whoever, like, we can't just be afraid of that, and you know,
yeah,
you need to transform it. So
right,
it's like the way of breaking the spell or the curse isn't pretending that pain isn't real.
Right.
It's about sitting with the pain and going towards it and transforming it and healing it, you know. That's the way that I kind of imagine breaking the spell of playing heavy songs and not, hopefully not having a brutally tragic, you know, fate for everybody involved.
Well, amen to that. I think that's amazing. Okay, well, let's, before we play a version, tell us, you're on tour now in Europe. You've got a wonderful band with you. Maybe you could just tell us what you're up to and who your band is, and we can. I have the honor of being able to join you to try and play the song.
Yay.
So, and thanks again for everyone for coming. But yeah, tell us what you're up to now
Okay. Well, we just landed a couple of days ago. We're from, my band is based in Snenemuk territory on so-called Vancouver Island in so-called Canada on the West Coast. And then we have Patrick McCarthy, who is our merch boy driver, go-go dancer. Al Murray is playing drums, and Aaron Burton is playing bass. And we just played with Ye Vagabonds. We just played in Dingle. We're on our way to Sligo tomorrow. So we're doing a few dates in Ireland. We're going to be playing again with Ye Vagabonds in Dublin. And then we go over to meet with another Irish artist, Eva Nessa Francis,
yes,
and do a tour through the UK. And then we're going to be doing some shows in France.
Awesome.
And we're playing, a couple of traditional songs, mostly original, but this and that, and just really, really, really grateful to be here. And,
it's great to have you here.
It's really, yeah. Thank you so much for inviting me to do this.
In a way, it's a shame to talk about a traditional song, because I love your original songs, and if we ever get the chance to do this again, we'll do it with one of your original songs. Just, for some reason, Katie Krewel came to mind, and then you said that this song had kind of been coming up for you in various ways, and it weirdly made sense to talk about it. So here we are, Katie Krewel. We're going to play a version of Katie Krewel, and then this episode will be over, and then Aura's band, they're going to give us just a couple more songs if you all want to stick around. So thanks everyone for coming, and we'll get up set up here and play the tune.
Thank you.
to you. Okay. Yeah. Aw.
What?